Maurice Misiolowski is in Melbourne. Hello.
Hello to you too, and to everyone else.
Good. How's it going?
Yeah, very, very good. Blue skies here, chilly mornings, but otherwise we're okay.
Okay then, my turn. It's been the hottest days, I believe, ever in Hong Kong, in forever.
Ever?
Yeah, it's crazy. It's 34 Celsius now, and it's one of those really hot, you know, the air is hot. It's one of those.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
No, I'll take my chilly outside then.
No worries. I was thinking about something this morning, and you can make sense of it if you can, really. You know, very often when people of a certain age talk about children, young learners, they can't write, they don't have books, this, that and the other. And I was thinking to myself, is that a redundant thing to say? Because that's, you know, the technology that they use, even little kids, that's all they've known.
It's the perfect thing to say, Phil, for every single generation ever since we were put on this earth.
Oh, yeah.
I think, and if you go back into literature, literally going back thousands and thousands of years, we've always lamented the stupidity of the next generation, how they have not learnt the lessons we learnt. But your point is absolutely right.
Do they need to,
The education system we had for the last 150 years was wonderful. It was perfect. It was built for a society that knew exactly what kids were going to do when they finished school. It knew the career they were going to have, and that career would see them through 40, 50 years maybe. Right. They didn't need to upskill very much, and it was rinse and repeat, and nothing wrong with that. The world was perfect then. And our education system, again, was built for exactly that purpose.
Yeah.
To your point, today's kids, we can't put them out into a world where 40 or 50 years is known. The careers that they will do don't even exist in most cases. The skills that they need haven't even been thought about yet. Mm. The reality is that they will do a number of things throughout the days, weeks, months and years, and each of them will be concurrent. In other words, it's a complete mess compared to what we knew, but a beautiful mess.
The thing that springs to mind immediately is, and I totally agree with all of the things we're kind of getting to, but you know, writing and reading doesn't have tangible evidence of damage on your eyes and ears. Well, a lot of technology does, one way and another.
It supposedly does. I think, you know, a lot of people make that statement. I've seen lots of evidence, lots of research where, in fact, they say that isn't true. The causality isn't there between looking at a screen all day and your eyes going, you know, becoming worse or deteriorating your ears too. But having said that, there are some really interesting research being done, and recent ones too, where they say that paper-based learning for reading and writing, and these are educational research with the usual university researchers behind them, all those kinds of people and caveats, are saying that it appears that traditional, what we would call traditional paper-based reading and writing, allows students to absorb the material far better than it does in a digital space. And I've read a number of reports in the last couple of weeks around that too. Different reports, different researchers coming to that same conclusion.
I wonder what kind of evidence there is about effects on eyesight. I mean, it really does, you know, I would say damage, but your eyes get very tired. There's an oral version of it too. If you listen to something on headphones for a long time, I don't know what it's called, but your hearing gets a bit dulled and you're hearing things that aren't there.
It does, but lots of people wore glasses before.
I know, before
computers were around. My eyes got very, very tired, still do when I read a lot from a book. I'm not saying either is right or wrong. I'm just saying that this 100% notion that it didn't exist before and it only exists now because of screens is always incorrect. There may be more people around that are looking at screens than physicality, but again, the research doesn't strongly hold that up, as strange as that may sound, and as contradictory as it is the way most people believe it to be true.
Right. Well, look, I mean, the fundamental thing to talk about here is there anything wrong with technology-based learning if you are four? I'm thinking they've known nothing else, so I guess there isn't.
There is nothing wrong with it as long as we don't accept it to be everything. And our education system doesn't. So we shouldn't give up the ghost, and nor do we, nor have we, nor has anybody ever said we would, give up the ghost and say technology will tell the kids what to do, where and when, and they just have to walk along like robots or lemmings. That's not in anyone's vision of the future of the world. Mm. But what we do have to agree, and we do have to agree this, that technology, as you've said, has given our students, our young ones, an ability to see the world, interrogate the world, use the world in ways that we couldn't do before.
It's like you know, the scientific calculator years gone by was their AI. for now.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, and I actually that's exactly the story I told last week in a keynote when somebody asked me the question about technology and students.
Yeah.
I always go back to this keynote. When I was in fourth form, which was a long time ago, I remember that my father had come from Hong Kong with this incredible artificially fake leather, you know, wallet, and inside of it was this most glorious little box with numbers on it called, I think we used to call the calculator. Yeah. I mean, it was so new and so different that that's exactly what it was. It was something that God had brought back. And I took this calculator to school one day because maths I didn't enjoy very much. And I figured out how to use the calculator really well to be able to get the answers to the sums that this poor teacher was trying to get me to answer. She saw me playing with this calculator, doing it, and I can still tell you in my ears ringing with the lament that she gave me about how I was going to hell in a handbasket because I was using a calculator. She threw me out of the room. I've never been thrown out of the classroom, you can imagine not. She threw me out of the room. I got in all sorts of trouble for using technology.
For being sneaky, Maurice, probably.
Because I was going to be dumb. Now, firstly, she was right on the last point, but not on the rest of it.
Yeah.
It means that technology is there to help children. We have to invest in them being able to use everything above it. If I can fill also one other story from that same keynote last week. One of the questions that was asked by somebody in the audience, exactly about this point, they were worried that their children were using artificial intelligence and not really giving work into this teacher that was there.
Complicated, yeah. Sure.
Yeah, so we talked about that, and thankfully in the room, I mean, I've got opinions and I've got views, and again, I work in tertiary as a site, not work, but I consult into tertiary. So I gave her the usual answer, which is that most students now, their work, when it's assessed, is assessed digitally. And before the teacher gets it, it's done what I call washing, which is technology. Something like Turnitin is one of the examples that looks at it and says whether this is something that's been done by technology or by a student and gives it a mark out of 10 and shows exactly where. So first of all, students can't get away with it as easily as most people think because there's a technology intervention. But what this person said, and she was very, very senior in one of our, I must say, best universities in Victoria, she made a really great comment that I was so thrilled to hear from somebody so up high in the hierarchy, and that is that they have been working for the last year and a half, particularly since ChatGPT came out, not to change the curriculum because they can't do that because that's not under their control. It's under the control of the Australian government, federal government, to do that. But what they have been changing and what they've insisted from all of their teaching staff is that they change the methodology by which they assess students. They're no longer looking for rote answers. They're no longer looking for memory because they've given up the thought, or they have the thought, that that's done by technology moving
that
forward
makes
to
sense.
These students.
Yeah.
What they're looking for now and what the assessments are all aimed at is 100% original, creative, human thinking around the topic. And for that, the students have to provide answers that are unique to them, showing their understanding of the topic, not their ability to memorise something. I thought that was extraordinary. Simple, but I think it's a way that we can move forward.
That is very interesting. Does that actually mean that the technology does the spade work that we really don't need
yes.
to do?
Yes, it's the tractor, it's the screwdriver, it's all of those things. We've actually built something, for better or for worse, and we can argue and we shouldn't give it up. You know, we shouldn't just say because it is, that makes it right. But we are definitely building something where none of us have to remember phone numbers because very few of us do anymore.
No.
Apart from being able to basically look, which I think is a really important trait of the series of numbers, and knowing it's kind of right, meaning the answer that's given me is kind of right, most of us really don't understand how to do it by ourselves anymore.
Yeah.
But we have to learn enough and know enough to be able to say whether it's right or wrong and to make personal opinion. And you and I have talked a lot over the years about the only thing that's left for humans to do when technology does a lot of the grunt work is wisdom. Is be human, is be creative, is be intuitive, is invent, is do things that humans, I think, were meant to do. The routine work very few of us actually want to do.
Let's talk about how education is done or has been done for a moment. At what point, you were talking about when you were a kid and she chucked you out for having a calculator,
yeah.
At what point did the establishment accept these props and allow you to work with them? Which they did, probably in the 80s or something.
Yeah, I think it's rather teachers than anything else. Some teachers gave up the ghost or saw the purpose in it. Others didn't. And again, it was not always the case that they could. It required a brave teacher to do it. Another story from my background. When I started teaching in tertiary, again, back last century in the 90s.
It was.
I lectured in management, and one of the subjects I taught, strangely enough, was business planning and marketing.
Right.
I set up for my students in those days a bulletin board. Remember the old bulletin board where you had to dial up and it was really horrible and only nerds and geeks would go into
That's
it?
That's right.
I set up a bulletin board, and in there were the students' notes. Now, I gave it to them physically as well, but I wanted my students to work in the future, strangely enough for me, and I wanted them to, you know, use this new material. So they would go online to get their notes every week. The faculty found out, and again, I was called in to the dean of faculty, and I was told under no circumstances was I ever to do that again. I needed to take it down immediately. Tertiary information would never be disseminated online. It was proprietary, belonged to the university, even though I developed it. It was my material, nothing to do with them, and that I should never, ever, ever do that again. I was admonished. I took it down, and you know the end of the story was, of course, with me, Phil. I put it back up the next day in another spot, told students and did if anyone ever found out, we were all in trouble because they loved the fact that somebody was silly enough to do this.
Yeah.
And it was a wonderful thing. To your point, people are used to what they are. The education system is lockstep. It is supposed to work in a particular way to make sure everybody is equal in access and in ability to use it properly. And some people take that to the letter of the law, and some people bend it to give students an opportunity in the future.
It's interesting as well, Maurice, because you were teaching your guys to be way more organised.
I thought I was, Phil, and I really did value being able to model something, which was always my way of instructing, to model something different for the students. I want them to think creatively. Even before it became a thing, I want them to see a different world. But both of those examples, I mean, they were many, many years apart, are examples where the system meant well. It was used to doing something.
But it was scared.
It was scared. They were not trying to do anything untoward. It was just that they couldn't accept what I thought was a growing reality of a possible changing opportunity.
I want to turn my attention in just a minute to your blog again, but just to wrap up this conversation, I talked about early learning, kids having all sorts of technology, real kids having all sorts of technology, and they have known no difference, so why are we older people moaning about it? A conclusion there, Maurice, a fundamental step forward in particularly young education, as you see it coming up in the next X years.
Yeah, it sounds really simple. We have to allow our students to be creative. We have to allow them to play. By the time students leave kindergarten, which is about year 4 or 5, we put them into the toothpaste tube and we squeeze them out the other end. We can't do it, Phil. We really do have to allow them the openness to explore and to look for possibilities, because it's the only way they're going to survive in the future.
Do you think the gig economy, Maurice, is going to kill sort of snobbery about where kids belong in the strata of jobs? You're a clever boy and you're a brickie, and brickies are really talented as well. But, you know, our parents' generation, if you were a brickie, you weren't considered talented. Then it came to them living in a house. You know what I mean?
And that shows it shows such a fundamental difference, which I hope that we're outgrowing. It's the evidence that we're outgrowing, is that we devalued careers and skills that used hands, and we valued skills that used our brains. And in fact, we know that both of them work harmoniously together.
Yeah.
I have always said our education system has to teach for tomorrow, not for yesterday.
Yep.
But the system doesn't. Teachers do. We need great teachers, and we need to value them, and we need to give them the opportunity, even in those really formative years, to allow students to play and to experiment and to find solutions. Of course, guide them. Give them all the instruction. Give them the railway guides.
Mm.
But within that, let's let them explore for themselves.
Yeah, well, a great teacher, anybody who experiences one is very lucky. Very, very lucky indeed. You know the kind of guy, you never forget Mr. Chan from when you're 60 years old, you never forget that person.
Inspirational, aren't they?
If you're lucky enough to have a guy or a lady like that teaching you, boom. A couple of minutes, MauriceFuturist.com. Now, you were writing about robots again. What is it this time?
Again.
I don't mean it like that. Right. I mean,
No, you're absolutely right. It is again. The reason for that is that there's a lot of scuttlebutt that Apple, our iPhone, iPad people, Apple, are going to put out some form of a personal robot in the next year or two.
Oh, dear. Here we go.
Now, this isn't a robot like Betty from Jetsons, for those that remember, you know, that runs around and has a face and does all the chores of the home. That's most probably not what we're looking. It most probably is a little personal thing with maybe a screen that kind of either mimics a face on a table type thing, an extension of the smart speakers that we see. So it led me to think about where these future robots might be and the places they might be purposeful. And again, as you said, at morrisfuturist.com at the blog, I've written quite a detail, quite a long article even for me, about where these are. But what I found fascinating was that a report from the World Economic Forum giving 5- and 10-year predictions of where these robots might be purposeful and useful.
Yeah.
And the only thing that came over 50%, in other words, in 10 years, it's likely that robots will do 50% of the work required in this, were shopping, online shopping. Yeah. The only two places where robots topped 50%. Everything else that we think, household cleaning, dishwashing, ironing, laundry, all of those were well, well below 30%.
Yeah, Apple amazes me. They can make Centennial Man, but can they put a 3.5 audio jack in their blinking phones? Anyway.
You love that audio jack. So, to me, what I was trying to get across in this article was that robots aren't a tomorrow thing. They're a long way down the track, but technology is here with us, artificial intelligence is here with us, and we have to learn to play. You know, the three of us, technology, artificial intelligence and humans, need to learn to play well and nicely together, which dovetails into our education system.
It does, and we've got to land the plane with two letters, I suppose, AI, that's it.
Oh, I think so. I think it is the backdrop, like the internet and social media have been.
Thank you, Morris. Always such fun talking to you. We'll catch up next week. Morris Misolowski, live from Australia. Jared Watt is awake, and I think we'll try and catch up in